This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome to The Garden Show. Yep, it's only my voice that you're going to hear today other than the callers. So we will change it up a bit when we get some calls coming in because my sidekick, Robin, Dean Holland, is in Ottawa today. He's outperforming part of the Tom Thompson's Wake gig that he's been doing for the last year or so. Wonderful show. If you get a chance to see it, I highly recommend it. But in the meantime, he's unavailable to be with us today. So it's just me that you're stuck with. But of course, you want to get your questions in. It's that time of year. We have lots and lots of good questions coming in from callers. So let's get those numbers out of the way right away. Of course, if you're in the local calling area in the Toronto GTA area, the local is 416-360-0740. Outside of the local calling area, the number is 866-740-4740. And of course, we have a mantra. The mantra is call early. That's like early, like now. Call often and as many times as you want, but only one question per caller. Now, Ashley is here, so you will hear her voice when you give a call. And she is in charge of finding out who you are, what you're calling about. And she's also interested if you're a first-time caller. If you are, please let her know. And that's what you'll hear when you get on the air. That's my latest version of chimes. So we will present the chimes for those of you that are calling for the first time, because we're always very excited when we have first-time callers calling in. And, you know, we like to welcome you to the show. We call that getting your garden wings. Now, just before we head off to our first break, I'd like to remind you this coming week, I will be at the Angus Glen Golf Club. If you can join me there, it would be wonderful. It's quite a wonderful event. It is a fundraiser. It's being put together by the Unionville Home Society, but of course it's on behalf of Union Villa. So Union Villa is a long-term care facility, been there for a very long time. And I think that what they're finding is that, you know, it's a wonderful old facility, but the residents, the people who live there, it is their home and they need more gardens. So they want to put together some sort of proper sensory gardens and a proper courtyard for residents for sitting out in the nice weather and enjoying plants, etc. So I'll be there as part of this event with Kate Seaver, Kate from Kate's Garden. Some of you will know her. She runs a wonderful company called Kate's Garden, and they're all they do garden installations and maintenance, and they do very lovely work. So if you are a person who loves detailed, lovely work, you want to call Kate's Garden to look after your garden. Meanwhile, Garden by the Greens, check that out on the web. Angus Glen Golf Club this Thursday, all day. Tickets are $100 starting at 10 a.m. and following after lunch. I'll be speaking on gardening as we age. I notice it's time. I can see Ashley's like yelling at me. Charlie, take a break, and we'll be right back after this important message from our sponsors.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All right, I miss Dean already. Where is he? Normally he comes in after all the breaks. Now I have to really pay attention. We have callers on the line. Our first one is Joan calling us from Hamilton. Good morning, Joan.
Good morning. Good morning. I have got a huge aloe vera plant, and it's so heavy that I have to put a vase in it on the bottom to keep it straight, and a plate too. I'm visually impaired, so I did not see this stem in the middle that is grown 3 feet and 2 inches high. Well, with flowers on the top. I didn't even know it could even do that.
It just suddenly was there one day. Yeah, no, I hear you.
So the bottom half now is limp, and it's still got quite a bit more to go up to the top to go limp, if that's what it's supposed to do. What am I supposed to do with it? Am I supposed to cut it down once it's gone? I don't know.
Well, obviously you're doing something very right. So just congratulate yourself right away on that one. Aloe vera only flower inside our homes when they are very happy. So, whatever you're doing the right thing. So it's cool. Enjoy the flower. Some of them are fragrant, which is pretty interesting once the flowers start to open. And I've had people tell me they've had jade plants flower in their homes. I remember my brother one time got a Sansevieria was flowering inside his place. It's usually got to do with light levels. They need lots and lots of bright light and fairly high temperatures in order for the flowers to form. For now, enjoy the flower. You're right. It's going to be a little sort of it's kind of a nodding flower usually. So the stem will go up, but the flower will tilt over. So just let it do its thing. If you want to stake it, if you have like a thin bamboo stake, you could put into the pot just to stabilize the flower to hold it upright. Go for it, tying it very gently. It will not last forever. It'll be there for maybe a month. And once all the little petals have dried up and fallen off, at that point, you will remove the flower stem right down at the base from where it's growing from. But in the meantime, take pictures, brag about it, tell people you know everything about aloe vera.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for calling. All right. So let's head off to another Joan calling from Oshawa, who is a first-time caller. Good morning, Joan.
Good morning, Charlie. How are you?
I'm great. I thought I was being so clever here, but my phone doesn't want. Wait, there it is. Isn't it ringtone? There you go. Can you hear that?
I hear it. Yeah.
There's your garden wings. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Charlie, I just have a question regarding a hydrangea. I'm not sure what type of hydrangea it is. It's got very, very huge flowers on it when it blooms, and it's kind of a chartreusey green color, and then it turns, I guess, kind of a cream and then a little bit of tingy pink on it. I was wondering whether that type of hydrangea, if you add pine needles to it will make it turn blue, or is it only specific types of hydrangea that you can do that to?
Well, the hydrangeas that we can modify the color on have round flowers. So does your hydrangea have round flowers or conical flowers?
No, they're round. They're round.
Okay.
Very huge, huge ones when they bloom. They're really huge.
Wow. And did you plant this hydrangea, or was it there when you moved in?
Actually, I got it as a piece from my neighbor next door, so I don't know what. I thought it was a limelight because it is that limey color when it first opens.
Yeah, but the difference with limelight is that, so there's two kinds of hydrangeas we grow in our gardens. The limelight is an example of a paniculata. So those are the ones with the conical blooms. What that means is it's got like a pointy top.
Yes,
plus,
no, it's
they
not
bloom
pointy.
In late summer. The other kind of hydrangea we grow are round flowers, and they are the maculata, and they are referred to as big leaf hydrangeas. So they have they tend to be shorter. Like limelight is like 8 feet tall, whereas most of our maculatas are more like 3 feet tall. So real difference in size and height. if it's naturally already kind of a pinky chartreusey color, like you said, it isn't evidence of the pH of your soil. So yes, pine needles will make a difference, but not quickly. Pine needles will lower the pH of your soil, causing that pink to be a little less pink and a little more purple. So adding a little bit of blue in, but slowly. Might take a couple of years for the pine needles. It speeds up if you crush the pine needles before you lay them around the base of the plant to speed up the decomposition. The other thing many of us will do is we'll use a soil acidifier, so an actual packaged product that we pick up at our local garden centers. Aluminum sulfate is one form of a granular acidifier for your soil, and it is available, you know, just about anywhere. I don't recommend aluminum sulfate if you're planting edible foods in that area, because aluminum is a heavy metal that will stay in the soil and can be absorbed by plants. And of course, we don't want to eat unnecessary metal, you know, it's tiny amounts, but still in our food. I prefer just a sulfur-based acidifier, if you can find such a thing. There should be, I'm just looking at on the web here. Yeah, so a good old plain old soil acidifier it's actually got some Epsom salts in it, I think, if I look a little more. So what are your Epsom salts? Of course, you can buy those at any drugstore. Magnesium sulfate. So again, as soil amendment, so soil acidifier,
Would you put those pine needles on right now, like, or do you continue doing it over the summer, or you just do it at a one-time thing?
Oh, no, you can do it throughout the summer. As long as you've got access to pine needles, go for it. Yeah, I mean.
I have the Alberta spruce. It's got, you know, very, very fine needles on the ground right now, and I've got some Mugo pine. So can either of those be used?
Scoop them up. Sure, scoop them up. Put them around your hydrangeas for sure. If you have magnolias, if you have blueberries, any of those plants.
You dig it in, or you just leave it on
a lower.
Surface? You dig it in?
You can, but I wouldn't. Soil? I wouldn't. Don't bother. I'm big into lazy gardening whenever possible. So just put it on the surface. Weather will break down those needles, and they will slowly enter the soil and modify your pH. All right, thanks,
and
Joan.
If you use the commercial type, does it turn? How quickly will it take effect? Will it like turn blue this summer, or will it take a few years?
Well, it might not turn blue. Okay, so the synthetic variety is more soluble, so it will enter the soil in the form of a soil solution much quicker than an organic-based product. You will see a difference this year. You may not see true blue, but you should see blue tones. So you should see more mauves and purples as opposed to just the pinks. All right? Slowly but surely. But you know what? Just a quick addendum on that. Don't mess with your pH without a pH meter, because you are affecting your soil forever. Not forever, but you are affecting your soil and the plants around those plants. Just something to always monitor. If you want to be a biochemist, make sure you know what you're doing and you're monitoring what you're doing. Okay. Thanks, Joan.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Okay. There we go. Time for another quick break. We'll be right back after this.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. And it is the time of year for garden tips. I know it's been raining here for the last few days. I imagine it has been for many of my listeners. So I'm pretty excited, because even though it's a bit cloudy right now, I am going to be getting outside after the show, after breakfast, and getting into the garden a little bit. You know, there's lawns to mow. There's edging to do. I planted just before all that rain. I top dressed with some nice fresh triple mix, got down some grass seed, so I've top dressed and overseeded, so need to kind of monitor all that. I've got bulbs coming up like crazy, and there's always more work to do. It's spring cleanup in the garden time, so I've got lots of little chores, and I'm excited to get outside. I'm sure many of you are as well, because the nice weather is just making me itch to get out there and get dirty. In the meantime, quick repeat of the phone numbers. Local number 416 360-0740 and outside the local 866-740-4740. And of course, call early. We're getting past the early point. We're almost halfway through the show. Call often. You can always call again. One question per caller. And we have Tim waiting patiently, calling in from Scarborough. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Charlie. I've got an apple tree, which is a red, delicious apple tree. Mm-hmm. It's about 40 years old. Mm. It's been allowed to grow, like, really out of proportion. It's about 50 feet high. Recently, I've noticed some branches on the trees where the bark is starting to peel off.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when the tree came out in bud this summer, or this spring, I noticed that there's no buds on these branches, so I've cut them off. And what I'm wondering is, can I still spray the dormant spray on the tree now?
Have the buds open?
Can I seal the cuts, or do I not have to seal the cuts?
No, no, don't ever seal cuts. Don't worry about sealing cuts ever. That's just not done anymore. But hold on. What's the status? So the buds haven't opened yet, have they?
No, the buds haven't opened, but the leaves are just starting to form on it.
So right.
Little
so,
green.
Yeah, so there's two kinds of buds on apple trees. There's round buds, which are the flower buds, and then there's more elongated or oval buds, which are the leaf buds.
Yeah, these are the
all of that has been swelling up. So where are we at on any of that opening? None of it's really open yet, right?
None of it's really open. It's just the leaf buds that are on there, not the flower buds.
Okay. Have you dormant sprayed yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay, yes, I would definitely do it. Probably the weather is with you right now. We have a couple of days, I think, of dry days coming, dry days and nights. The rules with dormant spray are do it when there's little wind because you don't want to be wearing the dormant spray. It's pretty stinky. You also want to do it when it's above zero, which it clearly is, and when there's no rain in the forecast for a couple of days.
Beautiful.
And a 40-year-old apple tree, yes. The pruning, just the training, all of it is quite challenging when they're that old and that big,
yeah,
too. So even spring, it'll be a bit challenging.
We let it grow as a shade tree because for the first 10 years or so, it didn't produce any apples whatsoever. So my father-in-law, he drove some nails into the tree, and then all of a sudden it started to bear apples.
I know, that's that stress the tree.
Last year we had so many apples, the tree branches were bent so far down, they were hitting the ground practically.
Well, that's where the pruning comes in, too. It is a good idea to only... Were they edible? Were you able to eat the apples?
Oh, they were the most juiciest, most sweetest apples I've ever had.
There you go. There you go. I hope some people who are listening are going to go, oh, I'm rushing out to the store to get a red delicious apple. Remember, too, that you need to have a pollinator. Like if you have one tree and you're in Scarborough, so chances are there's other apple trees or crab apples in your neighborhood. So the pollination is happening once the flowers happen. And dormant spray is a protective spray. You're trying to prevent problems. So definitely see if you can get it on in the next, preferably today, the next day or two, because
sprayer,
it is a very important spray.
Can I use the hose and sprayer to get it into the upper parts of the tree?
Sure. Yeah, it's going to be your best way. You'll get your best pressure off of a hose and sprayer.
Yeah.
So remember, you follow the instructions. You mix lime sulfur, the smelly stuff, smells like rotten eggs, with oil, as per instructions. You set your dial, I think, to 60. If you've got one of the dial sprays, it'll go all the way to 60. Hook it up to your hose and continue to agitate or shake the sprayer as you're spraying because the oil, lime sulfur, will separate if you don't. All right? Thanks for calling, Tim.
Beautiful.
Good luck
Thank
with
you
that.
For your help.
Report back at the end of the season. Let us know how many great apples you get in the 2024 harvest. Very cool. Very cool. I love that. All right. We have Hannah's calling on the line, and she is calling in from Caledon. Good morning, Hannah.
Good morning, Charlie. Hello?
Morning. What's going on at your place?
I have a question about cyclamen. It's a house plant. I bought three of them, and two of them are gone already. And what's happening, the leaves, the plant is blooming. I bought it in a grocery store, and they're beautiful. And suddenly, the leaves start wilting, and the plant is gone.
Right, so they just start to collapse.
Yes,
so you still got one.
And I don't know why, because I let it dry, and I also water it. I try. many things, and I bought a new one, the little guy, and it's same thing happening. It's a good potting soil, good drainage. I don't know what's going on.
Okay, here's my suggestion, Hannah. Cyclamen grow from a tuber, which is just on the surface of the soil, under the soil. When you're watering cyclamen, always water from below into a little saucer from below the pot that has the drainage holes. When you buy cyclamen, they'll often have like a pot cover, like a festive plastic colorful cover. So right away, take that off. You do not want that on the plant. Put the pot into a saucer of whatever decorative look you want. Do your watering from below, and only water when it's really quite dry. So make sure that you feel the soil. It should be quite desert-like before you add room temperature water to the saucer. And the real trick with cyclamen is to keep them as cool as possible. The lower the temperature, the better your chance of having a really successful flowering long-term plant. But one more thing is that because it grows from a tuber, it, at some point that plant will go dormant. So do not water. If you start to see those leaves, you know, drooping and everything starts to kind of flop, stop watering entirely. Just leave it alone. Let it go dormant. And that might be what's going on for you in the case of the real falling down and limpness. So, you know, any plants that grow from tubers and roots from below ground, they do need that dormant period, and it just will look like a dead plant, and then it will start to grow again. But cool temperatures will prolong the blooming. All right, Hannah?
Okay, so what happened was I repotted. I put it in a nice pot. I took it from the plastic and I repotted. That's probably not good.
It is stressful. When we repot our plants, we are stressing them. So generally, I don't recommend, like when you first buy a little plant like that, it doesn't need a bigger pot. You'll know it needs a bigger pot if roots are growing out the drainage holes down out of the bottom of the plant. So with all your indoor plants, remember that. All right.
Thank you.
Good luck with that. You're very welcome. I love cyclamen. But cool temperature, like I said, that's key. And our room temperature tends to be in the low 20s or high 70s. And that's a little too warm for most of the cyclamen. Okay, I think we have a few more minutes. We can tune in and see what's going on at Marcia's place. Good morning, Marcia.
Good morning. Can you hear me, Charlie?
I hear you perfectly.
Okay, so I have a hibiscus plant. I trimmed it back in the fall, and now it's producing yellow leaves.
Okay. How did it look all winter?
It bloomed around Christmas time. There was a couple of flowers on it, and then within the past couple of weeks, it started to go yellow.
All right. So are the yellow leaves some of the older leaves, the ones that are on the inside of the plant?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's perfectly normal. So what's going on is spring is in the air. The hibiscus knows it. It wants to put out new growth, and all the new growth, of course, will happen at the tips where you did all that pruning last year. It's just ready to burst forth with new leaves, new flowers, new stems. So the older leaves that have been hanging there since last summer are saying, okay, enough, and dropping. So don't be overly concerned when old leaves drop or turn yellow. It's the new leaves that we don't want to see any yellowing. Fertilize it if you haven't already, Marcia. It is spring. It's April. It's time to get into our every 4 to 6 week fertilizing of our, particularly our flowering plants. So do that. That will encourage new growth, and it'll also help the plant hold on to some of its older leaves.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Charlie.
Thank you so much for calling. Lovely to hear from you. Wow. Okay. All right. This is a good question. I can see this is going to be a good question and a bit of a hard answer. We have Jean calling us from Newmarket. Good morning, Jean.
Good morning, Charlie. I am the self-appointed president of your fan club, and I know you know everything. Now, I don't want you to be biased on this. We have a wedding. Our daughter is getting married in September, and I think we should buy the ground cover to put in the tent. The tent is going to be 40 by 100, and the wedding party is pushing back. What can I do to change magically a hayfield into a lawn for 100 people?
40 by 110. But there must be a dance floor in there. Or like there's tables and everything in there, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they'll be putting plywood down or some kind of a floor down for that.
Yes. Well, just on the dance floor, yes.
Oh, so not at the tables.
No.
Right. And is it really a hay field or is it just a really unkempt lawn?
No, we have a farm and it is in full production of hay.
That's great. So is there, okay, so there's really, so you will be, the hay, you will be taking hay off at least twice before September, I imagine.
No.
Oh, you won't.
They want to change, I'll tell you, I want to pay the $5,600 and have the ground cover put on. And then there's no headaches because we'll never get a lawn. Shut up, Jean. I'm not biased. Tell me what I should do, Charlie.
Well, when you say the ground cover, what ground cover? Is somebody recommending they're going to plant like what? Like thyme or something? What are they going to plant?
No, a tarp.
The cover. Oh, I see.
Rent it
with
the tent.
Oh, that's a bit of a hard question, eh? So you're under a tent. So the advantage of putting that cover down is that it'll be easier to walk on, and that'll be a solid. I mean, that's the thing. Is it a pretty formal wedding? Are there going to be, is your daughter wearing like stiletto heels, or is she wearing rubber boots?
No, I hope not, either one. But she has advised everybody to come casual because it's informal, but it's a sit down and all the, you know, bells and whistles.
Yeah. You know what? I hear you. Okay. So my best advice would be don't stress it. What I would do is the area, if you're not, okay, so if the area where this is all happening has been a hay field up until now, then I would get the farmer to get out there and cut, if it wasn't cut last fall, cut that all down, that whole area, that 40 by 100 area down soon, like in the next today, then I would get annual grass seed. So annual grass seed is very inexpensive and it grows very quickly and it will die in the winter. So it's not a long-term solution, but it will give you a green fill and it'll be a soft green fill in that entire area, assuming that there's some rain and it grows and it will have to be mowed. It'll have to be cared for a little bit. I might even crank a little fertilizer on. Like, it's not that hard to actually grow. You've got quite a lot. It's only April, you know, May, June, July. You've got 5 months to grow a lawn. So if you want a short-term lawn, go with the annual grass seed, which is, like I said, inexpensive and fast. If you want to say, wait, maybe we'll make this into a lawn bowling court, then you might want to get a better quality grass seed. But either way, it is doable. I would use fertilizer. I would top dress. And I don't think it would cost you, it might cost you $5,000 to do it properly. So whichever feels right. I mean, I personally would rather see, I'd rather walk, if people aren't in stilettos, I'd rather walk on ground than on plywood or tarps, et cetera.
Thank you, Charlie. I appreciate you. And I'll keep in touch. Take care. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Yeah, you're just reminding me. I am good, very good friend of mine's daughter got married, and my friend had raised her family up in Whitehorse. So the wedding took place outside Whitehorse, and it was an outdoor wedding. It was in July. Unfortunately, the weather was a bit on the inclement side. It was kind of like today. It was kind of gray and windy and cool, even though it was July. And the whole thing, the only part of the entire tent, it was a huge tent, that was covered was the dance floor, you know, the plywood for the dance floor. Otherwise, it was all just rough, but it had been mowed and it wasn't true hay, but it was rough and everybody was fine and nobody was wearing rubber boots. But then again, nobody was wearing stilettos either. So there's my story of an outdoor wedding. All right. Looks like Ashley's gonna, you know, hit me if I don't take a quick break right now. So we'll be right back after this.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All right, quick repeat of the phone numbers. If you want to try and get in a quick call before the end of the show, local number 416-360-0740. Or outside the local, 866-740-4740. Happy to hear from you and missing Dean. So if he's listening, and loving Ashley because she's doing a great job. Waiting on the line right now is Anne. She's given us a call from Hagersville. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning, Charlie. I'm calling with regard to the fact that in late November, I added foundation soil to the north side of my house. Now I'm going to plant some ground cover vinca. My question is, should I add some other soil to amend that area, or is the foundation soil good enough for the ground cover?
Without seeing the soil, I can't say for sure, but likely you need to amend that soil. Remember, so what happened? What, your foundation was dug up to do some waterproofing?
No, we've been in this house for over 40 years, and it was sinking down, so I needed more, you know, so the water would flow away from the house.
Right.
So, you know, they delivered soil, and I just wasn't sure if it's good enough soil for my ground cover to grow in.
Oh, I see. Okay, so when you say they delivered soil, generally there's topsoil that's delivered, clean fill is delivered, triple mix. Do you know what was delivered?
Just the very, like when they dig to do a foundation for a house.
Oh. That's what you got. So it's so-called clean fill. All right. Chances are it is, excuse me. When we build a house or any structure, we don't build onto topsoil. So first they strip away all the topsoil, get down to the zone or the layer of firm soil that's below. So we've got our levels of soil, their profiles. We get down to that B profile and the building begins. And your foundation is placed onto usually very low organic content soil. So if you've received soil from somebody else's digging out for a foundation, I would definitely, if you can, either just depends on the area, whether you need to get a truck to deliver you 5 yards, or you could just pick up some bags. But I would definitely get either composted manure, if you're just getting, bags, or a good quality triple mix, either of which you can get by the yard or by the bag, depending. But it never hurts. Remember, every soil is improved with the addition of organic matter. So whether it's a poor quality soil in terms of fertility, whether it's a clay soil that doesn't drain well, or whether it's pure sand, all those soils with the addition of organic material are improved. And of course, organic material is manure, composted manure, and of course, triple mix is made from peat moss and peat moss and manure and topsoil, or should be. So that's always a good supplement. That's what I would do. Alrighty.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. It's an interesting question. Okay, so thanks for that, Anne. I'm just double checking. All right, Dan. Dan's on the... Oh, no, sorry. My mistake. We'll go straight to Hazel. She's calling from Wasaga Beach. Good morning, Hazel.
Good morning. I love your show.
And, thank you. How are things in Wasaga Beach today?
Oh, it started out gloomy, but the sun's trying to come out, so with a bit of luck, it will. I'm looking forward
good.
To it.
That's coming my way. Your weather's coming my way, so I'm looking forward to some sun myself.
What's
happening with your peonies?
They're just not blooming. I have two that I've had them in the ground for a good, probably 7 years now, and I might get one bloom or two blooms, and then that's it. I'm just wondering.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, how much sun are they in? How much sun on a daily basis? How many hours?
I would say at least 6 hours. They're in a southerly location.
Okay. So that's good. That's what you want. Lots of sun, direct sun, preferably 6 hours minimum. Okay. And they've been there 7 years. You do get the odd bloom. Did you plant them yourself?
Yes.
Did they, when you purchased them, were they blooming or were they just still early spring kind of dormant plants? Or
they were bulbs.
Okay. There's two reasons why peonies don't bloom. One, well, I guess more than two, but one, the most obvious one is that they've been planted too deep. If we plant our peony, because again, there's that looks like a potato, that big tuber. When we plant that, it has to be just right at the surface of the soil. And then the first growth in the spring pops out of that tuber, that potato-like thing, and it's above ground. So that is one reason why we don't see flowers, is that the tuber's too low. But if you have had the odd flower, then that means that might not be your issue. The other reason they don't bloom is insufficient sun, but no, you're telling me 6 hours, that's good. You could consider we were just talking about organic matter, consider top dressing around the peony, not up right close to it. You don't want to ever add mulch or any additional soil on top of the peony tuber, but around it where the roots are heading out, you could consider adding, you know, quarter inch, half inch of some quality composted manure or something like that, just to increase the fertility around the plant. And yeah, other than that, I have no, is it wet there? Sometimes it's too wet, they won't bloom. Is it well-drained soil?
Yes, it is. It's well-drained. And usually every spring about now, I'll add a bit of manure and topsoil just around it, not on top.
Perfect.
Of it. Yeah. And, but yeah, I'm just not having any too much luck.
Double check and see what depth they're planted. You may have to lift them. It may be just that they're down a little too deep. And when you're getting the odd flower, it's because the odd little new growth is close enough to the surface that it will flower. But other growth is coming from too far below surface and doesn't. So maybe get in there with a little trowel or a little fork this afternoon and just take a look. You like I said, you want that tuber right up just at the surface.
Okay. Just so that they're showing out of the ground or just slightly
the
below?
The tuber? Yeah. I mean, just like the finest layer. Yeah. You should be able to actually see the tuber, or it's just, you know, one grain of sand of soil below. Like it's that close to the surface.
Okay.
Yeah. Call again next week if that doesn't seem like the solution. Thank you. Thank you for calling. And our final break, we got to head off to that, but we'll be right back after this.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Okie doke. We're back and we have just a few more minutes till the show so quickly ends. Let's go directly to one of our patient callers. Den is on the line calling from Brampton. Good morning.
Hi, Charlie. Good morning. I have a question. I have a lemon tree I planted about 40 years ago, so it's quite tall, quite big. And a few years after that, I put a 21-foot round pool about 8 feet from it. Now I have a root that's about, it's like at the bottom of the liner lifted about 3 inches. So it's liner, it's wrapped around the root. Mm-hmm. So it's been fine, but I need to change the liner on the pool.
Mm-hmm.
So if I cut that root off, is that tree going to be extremely unhappy?
Hmm. Okay, so you are a little bit breaking up there. What kind of tree is it?
Oh, it's a linden.
Oh, linden. Okay, lindens are famous for having way too many roots, particularly usually superficial, so I'm surprised it's under the liner. There must have been moisture down there. I would cut it, but remember, if you're removing the liner and then you've got the root is exposed, any root pruning, which is what you're going to do, is not done ragged and jagged and messy. It's a clean, clean cut. You're going to obviously want to cut well back from the edge of the pool, because when you cut off that fairly good-sized root, more roots are going to grow. Like, it's very invigorating to have one root cut, because then 20 more will grow. So the idea is to cut it back far enough that the next growth will go around the liner rather than under. Okay?
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I'm going to have to cut it off right at the edge of the pool. That's all.
Yeah, I try and go back further than the edge if you can, because you're just gonna start pushing into the liner again, or you know, growing into the liner again. But lindens have lots of roots, so don't worry. One root will not kill the tree. That, like I said, the main thing is make sure it's a clean cut that can heal well. All right, okay, thanks, Jen. Good luck with that. And let's see, do we have time? All right, let's see. Carol is waiting very patiently, calling us from Collingwood. Good morning, Carol.
Good morning, Charlie.
Oh, I see you're a first-time caller here. Hold on. Let me see if I can figure out how to do this. Come on. There you go. There are
good,
sleepy,
I'm ready to fly.
Your sleepy wings. Welcome okay. to the show. I miss Dean. He's so much better at this.
Okay.
Welcome, welcome. Okay, what's going on?
Charlie, I have a south-facing balcony, mm-hmm. and I would like to grow, like, a fast-growing vine in a pot. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking Boston ivy grows quite fast. Mm-hmm. It would cover a lot of area. It's a sucker, so it would hang on to the brick. Would that mm-hmm. grow in a pot? And so what type of vine and what size of a pot would I need? I want something that right. that grows fast and sort of showy, sort of. And it's a south-facing, sure. so it's pretty hot.
Sure. Okay, so the challenge is that I wouldn't do a Boston ivy because it's a perennial plant. For it to survive, well, obviously it'll grow this summer, but for it to grow in the future, you know, future years, it has to be in a very large pot. And it may be something that you'll regret because they can be quite invasive, and all that holding onto the brick can actually cause problems with the mortar that's around the bricks. So that wouldn't be my first choice. What I would do, there's so many great, I mean, if you want a perennial showy southern facing, I mean, you could even go with a clematis if you want it in a pot, but it's got to be a big pot. We're talking minimum 20-inch pot for any perennial vine that will grow like a Boston ivy or a clematis or a silver lace vine. Gosh, even a trumpet vine, fast, showy, controlled in the pot, but will cling on to the brick, except the clematis, it won't cling on. I'd be more inclined to go with something like sweet peas because they're beautiful and fast and they'll love the sun, and you can cut them and bring them in and make little bouquets for your table. So they're fragrant, they're great cut flowers. That's what I would probably go to is sweet peas. I might even go with something like scarlet runner beans. Again, fast, red flowers, very happy, pollinator-friendly plants, and you get beans as a bonus. So there's, you know, a few good things that happen with the scarlet runner beans. I'd go with an annual vine, nasturtiums even. So any of those could really work out, Carol. But that's my best suggestion. Thank you for your call, but make sure you got a good sized pot and good quality potting mix for all that. Fertilize as necessary. Thank you for your call. And I have to let you go because we're almost out of time. Thanks, everybody. Thanks. It's been a joy, as usual, here on The Garden Show, hearing your good questions. Thank you, Ashi, for all your great help. Couldn't do it without your help. Happy Passover for all of you that are celebrating this next week or so. It's not that it's a great big celebration, but it has a very beautiful Seder that's attached to it. So happy Passover. See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.